This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania, episode 37. Today, I have a special guest. He is one of the unsung heroes of the Marvel Universe, someone you've probably never heard of, but you really should be paying attention to because he does quite an important job for Marvel Comics. He is the senior art director for Marvel. His name is Jeff Sutter. And how are you doing today, Jeff?
Good. Thanks for having me. What, and you pronounced my name right.
Of course, because, you know,
I'm pretty impressed by that.
aside from, you know, being the art director for Marvel, you're also the host of the Mighty Marvel podcast.
And I am.
And of course, I get to hear you pronounce your name, so, you know, you pay attention to that stuff, that sort of thing.
Well, I appreciate that.
So, of course, how long have you been working for Marvel?
I have been here for 14 years.
Oh, my. That's
started in February of 97.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. What inspired you to go into, you know, the comics business, or rather, are you more into the design aspect of things, or were you always into comics and you want to go into the business in some capacity?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't a superhero comics kid growing up. I was a different type of nerd. Mm-hmm. I was a huge Mad Magazine fan. So, you know, I was reading political commentary cartoons in the late 70s. Silly 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid, you know, reading political jokes and stuff like that. So I was in it a little different. My headspace was probably a little different than maybe some other kids at the time. But, you know, I loved Spider-Man growing up. You know, I was lucky enough to enjoy the original, the first and second animated series, you know, from late 60s and then early 70s, you know, which they played several times a day. So there's like, you know, I loved Spider-Man and the Marvel Universe in general definitely was something that was, I was exposed more to than say, you know, the other universes. But you know, when I was hired, I wasn't hired for my comic book knowledge. I was hired for my printing and my advertising and my marketing knowledge, which I had, you know, for going on for an 11-year career at that point. And here I am still. I'm like furniture.
So, okay, 14 years, that's quite a long time. And a lot of people, you know, sometimes just being in one, doing the same type of thing for a long time kind of gets to people. Like, what is it about, you know, Marvel itself that really made you want to stay? Or, you know, is it maybe because of the constant, you know, all the creative stuff going on around you? Or, you know, what exactly gets you excited about, you know, about staying on the job?
Well, I love what I do. So, you know, and that's, you know, people say that all the time, like, oh, you got to love what you do. And sometimes some people just don't have the opportunity to love what you do. You know, it's survival, and I understand that. I mean, however, my position gives me an opportunity to really never get bored of doing one thing over and over and over and over. And that's the beauty of it is I can work on – literally in a week, I can work on 25 different projects. And when I say different, I mean we can go from designing convention booth graphics, mm-hmm. to setting up a slideshow, to doing video editing for the DVD running in that booth, to interviewing Mark Waid, which I did yesterday for the Mighty Marvel podcast, to you name it, an ad, a logo design, lithograph designs, custom comics. The list goes on and on of variant covers. I mean, I could literally go on for like half an hour explaining the different projects. So I'm lucky enough to be in a situation where I'm not doing the same thing over and over and over, which would probably drive me a little crazy. And, you know, I have been in positions where I've had to do the same, you know, like particularly production work example, for, print output. So I'm, you know, again, blessed that I don't have to, you know, crunch numbers all day.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, it's art direction, you know, that stuff. It looks like it really is the most fun part of being in any kind of creative companies, because you see all this work come towards your desk. You know, you probably get to see a lot of covers before anyone else does. You see, you know, aside from editors, rather, you see more art than anyone else does. So that's always a treat, you know, and you get to see what everyone else is doing. So, yeah. Now, with that in mind, like for a typical design job with Marvel, like say a logo, like how many rounds does it normally go through until you have it the way you want it? Like, and not necessarily a logo, but just any job. Like, how many rounds do you usually take before you settle on something for as far as like say the logo or maybe a convention booth graphic or something like that?
You know, it's different every time, honestly. I mean, sometimes I can get an email, you know, check my email at 9 o'clock at night or something, about a project that's been put onto my schedule. And I immediately know what I want to do or immediately know what I want to try or pitch. And a lot of times what I'll do is with our team here, a lot of times I'll maybe explain my idea first and see, you know, throw it against the wall and see what sticks. And I can, most of the time, I think I can gauge whether or not people are into it or not. And then I go from there. Sometimes I'll do something. Say a variant program, that we're doing. They come to me and they say, look, we need a trade dress treatment. What do you think will work with this particular piece of art? And I may be given even just a sketch, a digital sketch, or, you know, not finished art. Most of the time it's not finished art when we start hashing something out. So it's, you know, a lot of times, sometimes I can do something once. Sometimes I do it 17 times. I try to put it up there with, like, music is like that, like writing music. And that's another great thing that about my job is I will get projects where I need to write a piece of music for something that we're in an animated piece or something from Marvel.com or a trailer that we're working on. And I think the creative process is pretty much the same for me in no matter what I'm doing is sometimes I knock it out of the park. Sometimes I have to hand it off to someone else, and I'm not too big to admit that sometimes things don't gel or don't come to me easily, and sometimes it's just like, oh, boom, you know, half an hour later, I've already got something worked out where we can then take it to the next level and, you know, really step it up. Or And there's a big team here. We got a lot of players, and you're dealing with editors, you're dealing with vice presidents of marketing and business development, and you've got studio people, and you've publishing people, Marvel.com people, and it's a very collective process. And sometimes it goes fast, and sometimes it doesn't. So that's to answer your question.
Well, yeah, that actually says a lot. I was going to have a follow up for you, but you pretty much answered it right there. You know, now as far as now, I was curious: do any of the actual monthly books ever cross your desk? Like, do you get involved in that too, or is that that strictly like say with selection of who's drawing a book or whatever? Is that simply an editorial choice and doesn't involve you?
I'm generally involved in when it comes to a monthly book something that goes normally through production. Mm-hmm. You know, we have our bullpen that have all the folks that actually compose the books with mm-hmm. the lettering and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I'm more involved in business development and marketing. So I'm more involved in sales tools. So okay. I work a lot on the when we have special variant programs. We did the Fantastic Four anniversary variants. We did Wolverine art appreciation variants, just to give you a sample of now these variant programs, are really to help the retailers, to give them something that they can pass on to their customers, mm-hmm. as a collectible, and drive sales up and get, you know, more exposure and whatnot. So I get to do kind of the little, let's say it may be a little less less pressure than, okay. than say someone that's putting together a 30-page book and has to get it out by the end of the day on Friday. I you know, because we do our own scheduling, I don't have those pressures that a lot of the other people have in production. So one, I'm glad for that, mm-hmm. because sometimes it's hard to have, you know, the creative process sometimes works great under pressure. Sometimes it does not work so great. I'm lucky enough to be in that position. And I've got a great crew. So, I mean, you know, the guys I work with are fantastic. Tim Dillon and Rich Ginter. I know you know Rich,
oh,
right?
Yeah, Rich, yeah. That guy.
yeah, that guy.
Yeah. So kind of on the same track, though, do you find yourself following design trends and you try and applying them to certain marketing materials that go out, or do you just stick your general guidelines as far as the terms of look and feel for any of the projects you're working on?
Yeah, I try to keep up with that, but again, it's weird nowadays compared to years back, where, you know, we have such a crossover now of digital. And I'll look at Rich Ginter staring at me through the window. we have such a crossover between digital and printing, mm-hmm. That I'm more of a traditional guy. I'm an ink on paper guy, and I've done my fair share of, you know, web design and whatnot. But I try to recognize what looks best on a newsstand, on, you know, on display at a comic book shop, mm-hmm. And I try to. I'm a real stickler for clean design and clean type treatment, which is not necessarily a very easy thing to do when you're dealing with superhero comic book artwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know how you mean. I mean, there's a lot of times when people try to do all kinds of funny stuff with the covers, and sometimes it just doesn't work, and it just takes away from, you know, the impact of the image that's used there, for example.
And exactly what you say. Sometimes it just doesn't work, and sometimes you're kind of forced into going a certain direction, and but, you know, we carry on, mm-hmm. and I try to have really, it's about Marvel. It needs, when you look at something that we produce, you should almost immediately be able to look at it and go, oh, Marvel Comics, and that's important. You know, it's a brand, and it's the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important for us to always represent, you know, the product as that's it. It's top of the shelf. It's Marvel. You can't get better than this. So try to continue that as much as possible. But I'm a big clean design freak.
Mm-hmm. And now for anyone who is in the design or production industry, like how did they get their foot in the door in a company like Marvel? Because, you know, obviously, like, Marvel deals heavy and creative and has a lot of, you know, a lot of artists and that sort of thing. Now, if someone in this particular aspect of art design wants to go in, like, what do they do? Or is it just as simple, like, say, looking for a job opening and then applying?
Well, I mean, in my case, that's what it was,
mm-hmm.
It has a lot to do with, you know, timing and, mm-hmm. and, you know, unfortunately, you know, you got to be in the right place at the right time, mm-hmm. and you have to expose yourself, mm-hmm. to the right people, and I'd say that across the board, you know, CB, you know, is on Twitter all the time, explaining things to artists who are breaking into the industry. Mine's a little different is, you know, I'm exposed to young designers through things like having an intern. You know, I've got a kid who's going to Parsons and you know, wow, he's got a great, you know, sense of design. He's got great type treatment. there may be an opening in production. There, you know, again, it's one of these things. It's a business, and you know, we're in the business of making money. And when there's an opening, you know, it needs to be filled. It's not like there's an ongoing opening all the time. So again, it has a lot to do with timing and being in the right place at the right time and you know, exposing yourself to the people that you want to try to be involved in, you know, going forward. It's not easy. I mean, it's a small industry. It's a very small industry. You'd be surprised. I mean, everyone knows each other. So be careful who you talk to, kid, and what you say, because they probably know them or will at some point.
Now, since I just literally learned that you've been doing this for 14 years now, was there any particular era, like over the last 14 years, that you, or anything that you were particularly proud of that you had done that you were responsible for that they used for, like, say, trade dress or something like that?
Right. You know, it was really exciting right about 2000 when Marvel Knights hit, you know, big, really helped to, I don't know, it took the industry into a higher level. I think they really raised the bar. Joe Quesada really raised the bar. Jimmy Palmiotti and all those guys, they really raised the bar for comic book storytelling at the time that maybe, you know, things weren't so good. You know, the company wasn't in that particularly good shape, and it had, I don't think it really had anything to do with that the comics were bad. It was just a bad time for comics. And it needed to be shaken up a little bit. And I think Joe would, you know, I think he excelled at that. That was a very exciting time to be we were on Park Avenue South at the time. It was a really exciting time to be at the Marvel headquarters at that time because, we were getting great success by simply doing the best work that we could. So, you know, all the ultimate trade dress and all that stuff is really fun to work on. And, you know, we redefined what a comic book could look like on a newsstand. You know, and it was just a really exciting time, and I'm not saying that it hasn't been exciting since then. It has. It's
that that whole period in general was. There's a lot of there. I guess it was sort of a creative renaissance over there at Marvel. I mean, you know, the Marvel Knights line was, you know, really doing a lot of things. You know, got a lot of eyes on the books. And you mentioned the Ultimate line. I mean, who would have thought that adding, like, you know, like two, you know, colored bars on each end of the book actually makes it pop out off of the newsstands? You pay attention, like, hey, look, what's that? Because you know it's that bar, and you want to see what the rest of the cover looks like. You know,
right.
So if it's behind something else, you see it. You know, there's a lot of really good visual design in that that trade dress, which, you know, they have done away with, but I think the new design works as well.
And, you know, they were really exploring like digital painting for the first time. It was just happening at that time, and it's just a lot of great things coming together all at the same time, and people were jazzed about it. You know, exactly what you say. I think Ultimate Spider-Man. Geez, we're still reprinting that. You know what I'm saying?
It still comes out. Like, I don't know how many printings that first volume has gotten since it first came out, but it's continuing to, you know, it still does well. It's still, you know, it's still a great gateway comic to any new reader.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's a really eye-popping Spidey on that cover that, you know, you just can't help but see what's going on, you know?
There you go, Joe Quesada.
Yeah.
And that was another fun thing that we came up with. We're doing the white variant covers at the time. And, in fact, Ultimate Spider-Man number one white variant, I think I just saw that on eBay not too long ago for $900.
Oh my god!
Something like that. I know. And I actually had like half a case of those, and I literally just gave them out to all my friends at the time. I had no idea. I put a couple away, so
just in case.
Well, you know, it's there, and it's something that I was proud to work on too. It was something that was really different, and I just love how comic book artwork pops off of, and I hate that term, by the way, but how amazing it looks like on a white background. It's just like, well, bam, you know?
There's always been like a great thing. Like, there are a lot of covers that every now and then have come up where it's just basically like a figure or something, and then it's just a white background. But usually, like, there's something really big going on. Like, there's a cover that you mentioned, Joe Quesada. He did a Ghost Rider cover some time back where it looks like Ghost Rider has been killed, and there's like a spear going through his eye hole or something, and it's a white background, and it just really stands out. And there's just something about, you know, the negative space. If used well, that really catches the eye. I mean, it also gives the image a lot more impact. So, you know, that sort of thing always worked out well. So,
that's a good example of like when I say I like clean design. I mean, yeah. that's a perfect example of that. I mean, look, go to the Apple website.
Yeah.
You know, that's clean. That's, you know, and it just, it draws you in.
Mm-hmm. Well, also some other fun stuff though, like, we spent like the last 20 minutes talking about your design and your Marvel work. Let's talk about the other aspect of your work at Marvel, where you are the host of the Mighty Marvel podcast.
I am.
And every time I listen to the show, it looks like you guys are having such a good time. And it probably helps because, you know, you know a lot of the freelancers, you know a lot of the people that contribute to the show. And you probably know them quite well, and you know they stop by the office or whatever every now and then do the creative stuff. It's like, I always wondered, like, what got you in the position that made you want to do the podcast to begin with? Because I thought as an art director, you probably do a lot of stuff already, and then they have you do the podcast in addition to that.
Yeah, that's a good question, and really it was that was another situation where I was presented with a project. Mm-hmm. At the time, John Doakes was running Marvel.com, and Joe Quesada came to him and said, "Hey, you know what? We should really get on this podcast bandwagon," which is podcasts were just starting to really take off, and our RSS feeds were you know, being picked up, and it was becoming mainstream. You know, it was in that phase, infant phase, fair enough, but it was becoming it was a buzzword, podcast. You know, I mean, I didn't know what it was. So they came to me knowing Joe knew I had a recording background. I'm a musician. I'm a part-time musician, and I did a lot of voiceover and recording work when I was a kid. I was a child actor. I used to do TV commercials and stuff.
Oh.
And as I got older, I became a musician and you know, really focused. I did a lot of recording and stuff like that, songwriting and stuff. So, John, knowing my background, came to me and said, you think we could do this? And I said, yeah, we could do this. Of course. Let's make this happen. So, you know, I got a recording software and a preamp, and then eventually I bought a laptop to really make it easier on myself. Mm-hmm. And we started recording our monthly press conferences that we would have with the comic book press, which was, again, the online comic book press was just becoming big at the time. And we would have retailers call in, and people would ask questions. They'd do a Q&A about the big projects going on. That seemed a little boring to me, and we did 12 or 13. And I said, you know, we need to come up with a better format, like a radio format, you know, let's make it like a radio show. I had listened to some other podcasts, and I realized that that's what people were doing is you can sit at your house and have your own little radio show, right, Pat?
Exactly.
So, I just kind of grabbed the bull by the horns and made it my own, and everybody was happy with it. So here we are, 100, and my next podcast will be 110.
Or is it 109?
No, I clear up on this next one with Mark Wade. I clear up the numbering system for everybody. I basically concede. So, but I don't want to give it away. I don't want to give it away.
Yeah, that was a point of contention over the last few episodes. And like, I'm trying to figure, wow, they can't figure out their numbering. It's like exactly what's kind of happening in the books.
I know. It became a running joke at that point, and it was just, I'm fueled by silly, so that's just the way that is.
There's nothing wrong with that either. I mean, you're trying to make it as fun as possible. You know, I mean, you're trying to project a certain vibe out of the podcast, and it really comes across really well because, you know, clearly you're having fun, your guests are having fun. I mean, particularly, like, some of my favorite episodes I thought were the ones that were the Chris Jeruso ones.
you mean your favorite ones are when where everybody jumps on the let's make fun of Jeff bandwagon?
Well, that was kind of funny, but, you know.
Yeah, Chris is awesome. You know, Nate Cosby, former editor here, really took my podcast and ran with it. But you know, it's all good. And you know, look, how can you really sit there for half an hour and talk about a single comic book? First of all, it's a comic book. You really can't talk about it too much because you can't give away what the project is, you know?
Exactly.
And so, okay, let's talk about the character. Let's talk about what direction you want to take. That's about all you can talk about with the comic book. I mean, honestly, you can't even talk about artwork all that much because, you know, the medium, it's a sound file.
Yeah, it's a visual.
So you got to mix it up.
Exactly.
You have to mix it up. I mean, I listened to some of your podcasts the other day, and you know, you guys mix it up. You're not always on subject. And if you are on subject the entire time, oh, God, boring. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, you really do have to mix it up or talk about other things as well, just because you got to make it fun. You got to be comfortable with what you're doing and sticking with one thing. I mean, there was a point where I wanted to just do reviews of comics or whatever, and just like, no, I mean, it's not helping if I do that because I can only talk about how awesome something is or how bad something is for so long, you know?
Right.
So, yeah,
and
it definitely helps to just kind of shake things up a bit and get into more, you know, more of a personal conversation.
Right. I mean, you can't read a review like four times because yeah, you've read it once. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like you get it. But if you're going to host a podcast, really, you got to kind of script it out a little bit or else it just sounds clunky. And, you know, go off on a few tangents,
mm-hmm.
You know, stay focused, keep it in, you know, another thing, some podcasts are just too darn long. So that's another thing. I've really tried to keep the podcast to about 20 minutes at this point. One, it's easier to download, and two, it's easier on
struggling.
Your ears.
And also,
yeah,
you're not struggling to come up with material to fill space, you know.
Yeah, and I want people to finish listening to it. You know,
yeah,
what I'm saying? Like, and I can totally understand it. You get 40 minutes into something, it's just like, oh, you know what? Switch over. I'm gonna listen to some music now.
Yeah. So okay. Well, at this point, You have mentioned you were a part-time musician. You still play with Hardcover, is that correct?
That's my band, yeah. We've been together almost 20 years. It'll be 20 years in October. And, you know, we play in North New Jersey and a couple of New York State gigs. And I'm playing about twice a month. So, you know, that's pretty busy. That's, you know, 25 shows a year. I'm you know, pretty proud of that. I mean, that's to me, and it's a part-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
I love performing music. And it, you know, it keeps me, it's one other thing that keeps me from going stir crazy, I suppose.
Do you guys tour outside of the New York or Jersey area?
No, we really don't. You know, we're all work full time. We all have families and you've got the daytime business and a couple Fridays and Saturdays on the weekends, we get to go out there and, tear it up.
I totally see you guys if you guys come out here towards San Diego, but, hopefully hopefully I'll be, if I ever when I end up in New York sometime, hopefully I'll get the chance to see you guys play.
That would be great.
I've always been curious because I've been a Twitter friend for a long time, and I try to help you pimp that stuff out. So, It's always cool to see you.
Much appreciated.
I always see you and my friend Steve Earnhardt. He tweets us Bald Steve, you know, talking about guitars and stuff all the time. It's like,
Yeah, I'm a real gearhead. I collect guitars, and you know, I'm not even a huge guitarist. I'm just a rhythm guitarist in my band, but I'm actually play keyboards more. But I'm the lead singer, so I have I got a lot of little jobs in my band. In addition to the big job, which is to make sure the show keeps moving. And again, you're talking about podcasting and trying to have a natural feel and flow with it. That's something I've really worked hard on in a live performance situation. You know, I play in front of, you know, real human beings, you know, several times a month. And I try to give them their money's worth. You know, I want them to have a good time, and we've worked very, very hard at that. And my guys are just fantastic musicians, and that makes my job so much easier.
Oh, yeah. And at this point, you know, we'll just get down to a Twitter question that was sent to me today by a certain Rich Ginter. And he asks, why do you eat a hobo lunch every day?
Oh, Ginter. Silly boy. I'm going to go out there and smack him. Look, you know what? I changed my diet up maybe 2 years ago, and I gave up red meat and pork. And I'm like hungry all the time, so I eat soup. I eat canned soup. I just open up the can and I just eat it. So that's what he's referring to.
So I
eat soup out of a can. So sometimes I'll Twitter hobo to give everybody an idea that I'm having a hobo lunch.
Oh, man. All right. Well,
it's healthy, and it's healthy food, and you know, it keeps me from getting sick.
So, Jeff, where can people find you online, aside from, of course, Marvel.com?
Yeah, well, Twitter, you know, I'm very accessible on Twitter. You can come and follow me and talk to me, and I actually talk back. And I actually follow my followers, you know. And I mean, I don't have a lot of followers, but I try to interact as much as possible.
What do you mean you don't have a lot of followers, Mr. 6,000 followers?
No, it's almost 6,000, yeah. But that's not a lot. See, because I work with a guy who has almost 2 million. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you're talking about Ryan, right? Agent M.
Yes.
Yeah, well he's a different kind of
yeah, he is. He's a different Twitterer, no doubt. Yeah, so I'm on there, and it's just Jeff Sutter, one word.
I'll be posting a link to that. Over the show notes. And do you have a website for your work so people can kind of see your portfolio or anything you've done?
You know, I don't have a professional website. I think my professional website is marvel.com. You know, because I've got my grubby fingers in so much. But I have my band website, which is hardcoverrocks.net.
Okay.
You can find out when and where I'm playing. It's going to be in the New Jersey, New York, tri-state area. So but come on out. I've actually got a lot of people from Facebook and Twitter to come out to see the boys play, which, you know, that's a win for me.
That's cool, man. It really shows that the social networking thing really does work to a certain degree.
It is a real thing, yeah. I mean, look, I'm lucky enough to be in a position where it does work for me. I actually have a reason to be on Twitter every once in a while. I have a reason to have these discussions about pop culture and stuff like that, because, you know, it's part of my industry. You know, if I was working in a print shop somewhere, I would not be Twittering about what I was working on, because no one would care. You know, I mean, who would care? Who would possibly care? I wouldn't care. You know, I barely care about my posts right now. I find them boring, but, you know, a lot of people love it. So great. Mm-hmm. Super. I'll do what I can.
And will you be coming to any conventions this year? Like, are you coming down to San Diego maybe, or just going to
New York? No, I'm doing New York Comic Con. I'll be in New York Comic Con, but you can see my work at all the conventions, because that's Ginter and I.
Yeah. I remember last year when you guys were kind of crunching down towards the San Diego Con, and it was just – sounds like it's the most stressful time to be you guys.
San Diego's you know, it is what it is. It's the well, it's the top of the heap, mm-hmm. and you know, hey, I hope New York becomes the top of the heap, but mm-hmm. it's sometimes it's hard to compete with what's going on the West Coast. You know, I mean, studio show, you know.
Yeah, and you know, it's also my home show, so that's why it's great.
Well, you know, what do you do? It's 4 days out of the year that you're probably MIA, you know.
Yeah. that's like the week where basically everyone comes to my city to see me. So
right. Yeah, good so. For you.
All right.
And everyone comes to New York to see me.
Yeah. You're part of it. Why I go there?
Come on, you gotta get out. You gotta come out here.
Yeah, which is kind of sad. I have not seen you yet because I remember trying to look for you over at the Marvel booth last year. So hopefully,
yeah, I was only there on Friday, but I think I'm gonna be there for a couple days this year.
Cool. Hopefully I'll see you and it'll be fun to chat with you again in person this time.
Absolutely, Pat.
All right. Well, once again, Jeff, thank you for joining us. If only for a half hour. But once again, find Jeff on twitter.com/JeffSutter or go to his band website at hardcoverrocks.net. Thanks again, and good luck with all the work. And, man, keep up the good stuff, man. I'm loving what you're doing, and keep busting out those great podcasts.
Thanks a lot, Pat. Thank you for the kind words. It's great. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take it easy.
All right, brother.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. There you have it, folks. Hopefully you enjoyed our little chat. It was a nice little talk, very enlightening, actually, because we got to hear some stuff that I don't think anyone's ever heard before about the inner workings of Marvel, and particularly their art department. So that's it for now. If you have any questions, of course, send them to theloika@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/PatLoika, or go to the blog at comicbooknoise.com/LoikaMania or thepatloika.com for my photo blog and my nonsense. So that's it for now. You guys take it easy until next week.
Like I've always known, somebody should, yeah, although tomorrow it don't look that good. Well, it just goes to show, though people say we're an unlikely couple, I'm seeing double of you. This is life. Everything's alright. Living life. Oh, hope for the hopeless. I'm learning to cope with the emotionless mediocrity. Day to day living. How can I help but be restless when everything seems so tasteless? All of the colors seem to have faded away. This is life, and everything's alright. Living life. Hold me like a mother would, like I've always known. Somebody should, yeah, although tomorrow it don't look that good. Well, it just goes to show, though people say we're an unlikely couple. Doris Day and Martha Hubble.